is that I have found out why people go to sleep in church. I was reading from a little book by Mark Twain called Tom Sawyer Abroad. Not the Tom Sawyer book, but their series of short stories that Mr. Twain wrote. One of those is called Tom Sawyer Abroad. And it is a story about Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and Jim, their slave, a friend, and a travel that they were on. And in this, and Huckleberry Finn narrates the story. And in this particular part of the book, Tom is talking about something that he's just going on and discussing it and making a lot of conversation one way about this particular subject. And he's talking to Jim. And in the course of the book, Tom is talking, and there's two or three paragraphs of dialogue here, and then it says, "But Jim was asleep." Tom looked kind of ashamed, because you know a person always feels bad when he's talking uncommon fine and thinks the other person is admiring that other person goes to sleep that way. Of course, he oughtn't to go to sleep because it's shabby. But the finer a person talks, the certainer it is to make you sleep. And so when you come to look at it, it ain't nobody's fault in particular. Both of them's to blame. So, evidently, if you go to sleep while I'm preaching, it's because I am speaking, as Mr. Twain says, uncommon fine. and the finer I talk, the more sleep you may go. So I know that I'm speaking really excellently if you go to sleep. There's the real hallmark, apparently, if you go to sleep. Well, you might want to check that out to make sure that's right or not. But why don't we do an attitude check tonight from Ephesians chapter 4. Our Bible readings this last week, among several places in the New Testament that they have taken us, were through the book of Ephesians. We spent a little time in Ephesians 5 this morning. I want to back up one chapter and look at something from Ephesians chapter 4 that we are going to call an attitude check. Because there are two things, two main directions that we're going to go here about wrong attitudes and right attitudes that we find really in the last two verses of the chapter. These verses, no doubt, are familiar to most of us, but as you look at Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 and 32, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, some translations say clamor, or you might have one there that says slander, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, through Christ, God for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. So as we look at this, it's very obvious that it falls into two major categories. And we're going to look at these two major categories from the standpoint of, number one, verse 31 talks about some wrong attitudes. And then verse 32 talks about some right attitudes. And so, we need to do an attitude check sometimes, because we all sometimes have a tendency to let things get maybe a little out of hand, and our attitude get just a little, you know, the direction that it doesn't need to be going. So, wrong attitudes. There are about five things that I want us to look at in verse 31 as we break this verse down. Number one, here's a wrong attitude: bitterness. Let all bitterness. And notice it says that these things, verse 31, are to be put away from me. These are not things that I need to that need to belong to me anymore. These are not things that I need to be characterized by. These are not things that I need to be identified as. That I need to put these things away. Just clean it out, get rid of it. I don't need to own this anymore because it's a negative. It's a bad thing. It's a wrong thing. And number one, bitterness. You know, there are few things more discouraging in this life than to talk to a bitter person. I know sometimes people become bitter because of circumstances beyond their control. I know sometimes life has been very, very ugly to some people. And life has been very, very difficult to some people. And they have had challenges. They have had difficulties. And unfortunately, sometimes as a result of those things, their heart has been hurt so badly that it's hardened. And they have become very bitter about things. Very bitter about life. And those are things that may not necessarily have anything to do with their own behavior or their own actions. They're just sad circumstances, unfortunate circumstances that have happened to an individual over which he had no control. You know, sometimes a person may be horribly mistreated by a parent growing up, or by a spouse, or by a coworker, or by a family member, or a neighbor. And because of that individual is hurt so badly at a young age, they become very bitter. But you know, this isn't just about getting hurt at a young age. This is about how we handle things all our lives. And we all have difficulties. We all have challenges. We all have devastating things happen to us sometimes. And we can approach this one of two ways. You know, we can't necessarily make what happened to us go away. We can't necessarily change those circumstances that created this dynamic, this event in my life. But how I react to it may very well be much under my power. And you know that there's not a big difference in the spelling between the words bitter and better. And some people have said we can use our trials, our difficulties, our challenges, and react to it in one of two ways. We can let them make us bitter, or you just change one letter there, and we can let them make us better. And you notice the letter that you drop is I. Because most bitter people, I'm going to make sort of a general statement here, but most bitter people are entirely too focused on self. Entirely too focused on their own issues. I know you got to spend some time, you know, evaluating and taking inventory and taking stock of your life. But so very often, the problem is related to the fact that somebody is so focused on self that they see everything as unfair. They see everything as you know, the world's out to get me, or so-and-so's out to get me, or the God's out to get me, whatever it may be. And they become very bitter. This is a wrong attitude. This is a bad attitude. This is an attitude that will destroy us. So, as the text says here, let this be put away. Do not let this become a characteristic of your life. You know, nothing really that's bitter is something that's very pleasant. You know, I tell you, you know, particularly as a kid, and you go up to the dessert table and you grab what you think is some chocolate, and it turns out that it's cooking cocoa that your mother has, and it's very bitter. You mix it with the right stuff, and hey, it's okay. But just by itself, woo, boy, you know, that is no good. You know, it's very bitter. And we don't need to leave that kind of taste in people's mouths and in their lives to where they're very turned off by us because we're so bitter. And it becomes a monster that sort of gets out of control if we're not careful. And all of these things in verse 31, these wrong attitudes, they're somewhat related to one another because bitter people also many times are very angry people. They're given to wrath and so on and malice. And we see how this may be describing not just one single characteristic, but a battery of characteristics about a particular individual. So let bitterness put away, because that's a wrong attitude. What about wrath as we move through here? Wrath. Let wrath be put away. Notice the text says here, wrath and anger. Now,
I did not really take the time, and it might be profitable if I had, to try to make a distinction between wrath and anger and do an extensive word study about these two things, because they're very similar to one another as we think about it. But it seems that maybe in some cases a little distinction is made from the fact that wrath may be the idea of just a settled attitude, you know, that this is how I conduct my business. This is how I live. I'm just a person of wrath. You know, whatever is going to come my way, I'm probably going to get angry about it. Whereas anger might be slightly different, in as far as anger might be the spontaneous combustion, you know, the spontaneous reaction. Wrath is a maybe more of a long term just manner of approach in life. In reaction to everything, whereas sometimes anger is just that volcano, you know, that Vesuvius that just blows up unexpectedly sometimes, even to me being the person who might be angry. You know, why did I get so angry about that? But these two things are very closely related to one another. So, but whether it's a settled attitude of opposition or whether it's just a sudden, spontaneous outburst of my passion, both of them are lumped together as negative. Both of them are lumped together as something that we should put away. You know, there's some people that, you know, I said one of the most discouraging things in the world is to have to deal with a bitter person. Well, maybe a close second of that is having to deal with somebody who's really angry. Especially somebody that's just really, maybe we would describe this as the person who is just a perpetual grouch. They're just always negative. And they're just always ill. And they're just always grouchy. And they, you know, it seems like they wake up on the wrong side of the bed every day. They need to rearrange their furniture. Because they obviously can't get out of the other side of the bed. And so they're just always grouchy. I don't like to be around somebody like that. I am like that some days. So are you. And we know how unpleasant that is, both for us as the giver and those who are on the receiving end. And then sometimes, you know, because of things that happen, our patience is worn a little thin. It's been a tense day at work, or you know, we've gotten a bad phone call or an unexpected bill. And just, you know, some little things. No one thing is just a, you know, huge. But some little things begin to pile up, and pretty soon we have one more thing and it tips the scale and kaboom, you know, anger. And the first person that we see receives the brunt of it. And we might yell, holler, you know, slam things around. And so this is a negative attitude. You know, we are reminded, as we think about wrath and anger, we're reminded of something over in the book of James, chapter 1, verse 19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, and then what? Slow to speak, and then what? Slow to anger. Slow to wrath, actually, many translations say. Slow to wrath. For the wrath of man, now look at what it says in verse 20. The wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So if you're the kind of person that is given to being a grouch all the time, you're the kind of person that you know, things are getting out of hand and your patience is wearing thin and you feel like you're just about to blow up at the next person who says anything to you or looks at you the wrong way, you know, if that's the way it is, you know, we need to step back and remind ourselves that we've got to slow it down and that we've got to crank it back, because what I'm about to do in this state or disposition of anger that I'm in, this attitude that I'm dealing with and experiencing, very well likely will not produce anything positive. And not only that, it will not produce anything spiritual. And most likely, it will produce the opposite of the righteousness of God. The wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So I need, to the best of my ability, to get a hold of myself and get myself out of that situation. you know, stop, drop, and pray. And see what you can do to get out of that. Maybe sometimes you got to walk away from somebody or a situation, at least for a little while, and get a hold of yourself. But this is a negative attitude to put away. Notice next, as we keep looking down through, number one, bitterness, then wrath, then anger, clamor. The New King James Version says put away clamor. Some translations say slander. I do have a footnote about this idea of clamor, meaning something along the line of loud quarreling. The idea here is somewhat related to the others, but particularly as we think about slander or clamor, that these are things that we vocalize, these are things that we verbalize that are negative. Maybe about another person, maybe about, you know, things in general, life in general, the church, the congregation in general. But I'm just a very negative person. And sometimes it may be that those things aren't true, and maybe they're very harmful and hateful to the individuals that I'm speaking about. And yet, because maybe I'm bitter, maybe because I'm angry, maybe because my attitude is not conducive to producing the righteousness of God, then I'm liable to say something about other people that, in my better moments, my more self-controlled moments, I probably wouldn't say that. I might think it, and God forgive me even for thinking it many times. But maybe at least I wouldn't say it. Because, you know, once those words pass out of our mouths and they get out into the atmosphere, it's very hard to take them back. And we can do untold damage to other people because we're angry or bitter. And you know, several years ago, Celine has a good friend that she went through Fried Hardeman with, and she said that her friend's mother and another lady were talking about just things in general, and somehow the conversation sort of got off onto talking about one particular lady, I think, at the church. And it was kind of going in a negative direction. And that her friend's mother said, hold it. We're going to stop right here. We're not going to say another word because I don't want to have to go to torment because of that woman. You know, because I'm talking badly about that woman. And sometimes, you know, I have to remind myself, you know, about, even if what I'm saying is maybe true, sometimes it's not true because I'm angry. You know, we tend to exaggerate things when we're angry. We tend to see things, you know, much bigger than they really are when we're angry. And so a lot of times the things we say maybe are quite a stretch of the truth. But even if what I am saying might have a lot of accuracy to it, is it really necessary for me to talk that badly about somebody else? I mean, let's face it, if person A over here, let's just call him Zacharias. If Zacharias over here if his behavior and his attitudes are that obvious, I probably don't have to tell anybody about him because they can probably see him too. So why bother to waste my energy and endanger my soul talking badly about somebody? Put slander away. Don't talk like that. Don't endanger your own soul. And then another bad attitude to put away, another negative attitude to put away. Evil speaking here, as it talks about clamor, evil speaking being, and slander being very closely related to one another. And how these things are identified as malice. With all malice, we put malice away. You know, that word malice, any time, almost any word that you see, particularly in the English language, that begins with M-A-L, it has some kind of negative meaning. Malnutrition, on and on. You can go and think about various words that begin with M-A-L. Because that prefix usually connotates a very negative thing. So, malice is kind of one of those catch-all words that is an identifying characteristic that's negative, that's harmful, that's hateful, that's unkind, that's ungodly. And maybe sometimes it's not just because I'm having a weak moment. Maybe sometimes it's just because I'm bitter and I have anger in my heart and I lash out at other people. And I hurt other people because of that. And my identity becomes one of malice. With you know they talk about in legal circles certain crimes being committed with malice and aforethought, because this is something I deliberately did. I planned to do this. I wanted to do this. And maybe you're like me sometimes, and you're not having one of your good days, and maybe something has really set you off, and you get angry at somebody. And pretty soon you hear yourself saying things that are unkind and not very nice. And you're saying these things. And on one side of your brain, you're thinking, you know, I don't need to be saying these things. Why am I saying these things? On the other side of your brain, you're thinking, how can I make it even worse? And so you get into this battle here, you know, with your mind. And it's almost like the little cartoons we see, you know, where the little angels on one shoulder and the little devils on another shoulder. And it's kind of like that because you know you're angry. You know maybe you're out of control, or at least you're on the verge. And for some reason, we don't want to do anything about it. You know, we want to pop. We want to get it out. And unfortunately, there's a lot of collateral damage when we do that. We hurt a lot of people in the process. These are attitudes that we all, at one time or another, have to deal with, that we experience. But put these away. Don't own these things anymore. Contrasting, let's look at three right attitudes. Kindness, tenderness, and forgiveness. Those are the right attitudes. Kindness, tenderness, and forgiveness. Kindness. This is the opposite of bitterness. This is the ability to see good and to think holy thoughts and right thoughts and see the best instead of the worst. And that consequently we are kind because of it. One of the most noble ways I think an individual can be described is kind. You know, she's a kind woman. He's a kind man. It just says so much about a person. I remember several years ago when I was living over in Florence that I preached a sermon on kindness. And when I was preparing for this lesson and thinking about this text once again, I thought about that sermon. I didn't go and pull it out or anything, but I have not preached it here. It's been many, many years ago since I preached that sermon. But I remember that after I preached that sermon, that several people came up and said something to me about the lesson in a positive way. And that there was even a mother and her teenage son that talked to me days later. You know, you get somebody to talk about your sermon the next day, you're doing pretty good. But, you know, if somebody talks to you about your sermon days later, man, that must have been, you know, right up there with the Sermon on the Mount. You know, something people didn't forget. Because I don't even know what I preached 2 weeks ago, okay? So I really don't expect all of y'all to remember that. But this mom and her teenage son, they talked about how, particularly the mom talked about it, how that lesson, you know, she tried to use that more in her life, in her treatment of her son. Because, you know, sometimes parents and children, moms and sons, believe it or not, they can have different opinions about things. Believe it or not, sometimes they can, you know, headbutt a little bit and be like the billy goats and the rams and so on. But they said, you know, overall, we hope that we are taking something away from this that will make our family just a little kinder. One of the remarks that was said this last week in the passing of our 41st president, Mr. Bush, as he said in his inaugural address when he became the 41st president, that one of his goals was to make this a kinder and gentler nation. Well, whether that's worked in America or not, I'm not sure. But certainly as God's people, we need to be kinder and gentler Christians. So, kindness. Now, Jesus said in Matthew 7, verse 12, speaking of the Sermon on the Mount, "Whatsoever you would have men do to you, do you also unto them." That is usually called the Golden Rule. And it's called the Golden Rule by man, but I think it's a very appropriate identification of that verse. That if we will show kindness to others, because that's ultimately what... Raise your hands if you want somebody to cuss you out. Raise your hands if you want somebody just to, go Vesuvius on you and angry and yell and scream and holler and be bitter and wrathful and angry and slander and malice against you. We don't want that. I want people to be nice to me, okay? So if I want people to be nice to me, Jesus said what? I need to be nice to them. And you know what? That works. That really works. And so this idea of kindness and tenderness and forgiveness as well. But kindness, if we want people, if we want to make this a kinder world, I've got to be a kinder person. I've got to be kind to other people. There is hardly a situation that I can think of where the Golden Rule doesn't apply. There is hardly a situation that I can think of where the Golden Rule doesn't work. Kindness. Secondly, it says tenderness. We need to be tender. Notice it does not say weak, because weakness and tenderness are not synonymous. Strong people are tender. Strong people are tender-hearted. We need to be tender-hearted. We need to be open to the needs of others and have an ability to feel with them. Sometimes that's called empathy, where we feel with another person. And it's not about being hard-hearted like bitterness is. It's about being tender-hearted. And that we have a tender spot in our heart for our fellow man. And that we are touched by what other people are going through. You know, how do you treat a newborn baby? Oh, very tender. How do you treat your great-grandmother's piece of china? Oh, very tender. We're talking about other people's hearts. We need to treat them very tenderly. We need to be tender-hearted individuals. And notice it says this is a characteristic. This is a mindset that we put off these others and we replace it with kindness, tenderness. And then number three, forgiveness. Ultimately, it is not up to me to pass judgment on another person. Ultimately, I am not going to be the one who's going to be standing on the day of judgment pronouncing sentence on all those who are going to be there. This is God's prerogative. And it is not my place to take God's business out of His hands and to put it in mine. And my best approach and my best outcome for practically every situation is to forgive. Now, that may be easier said than done in some cases, because some people have had horrible offenses perpetrated against them. And I understand that it's a challenge sometimes to forgive those who have hurt us deeply and scarred us visibly. Yet we must recall, when we're talking about forgiveness, and when we're talking about being merciful and kind and tender and forgive, that the Bible here uses the example of just as God, through Christ, forgave me. You see, I'm just as guilty of sin and hurting someone else as people are against me. And the fact boils down to, we've all hurt God. And yet God, in His merciful, compassionate, loving, kind and tender heart, has found a place of forgiveness through Jesus. And I must take it upon myself to forgive. And somebody might say, well, you don't know what they did to me. You don't know what they said about me. You don't know what they did to my family. You don't know how badly they hurt my loved one. I know all that's true. And I do not deny for one moment the passion, the emotion, the feelings, the hurt, the pain. But we must remember that all of those things that I, as one person, am saying happened to me, God can say happened to him a trillion times over. And that I'm just as guilty of hurting him as that person over there is of hurting me. We are more like God when we forgive than we ever will be. Because that's what He does. And I, for one, am eternally grateful. Because I, like every one of us, need forgiveness. I need tenderness. I need to be treated with mercy and compassion and love. And I need God's kindness. Even though so many times I've been so unkind, so unfeeling, so hurtful, I thank God that He has forgiven me. And that blessing of forgiveness, of course, is for anyone who obeys the gospel. That blessing of forgiveness is for anyone who's washed in the blood of Jesus at baptism. That blessing of forgiveness is for anyone who walks in the light yet stumbles, falls out of the light into darkness, and needs to return. And so it's a great blessing for every individual to know what it is and to have this mindset of, you know, there's some things in life that I need to do. There's some things in life that I have no business doing. There's some attitudes that I need to cultivate. There's some attitudes that I need to get rid of. Several weeks ago, Celine and I were in a store over in Huntsville. And we had gotten up there in line, and there were, I don't know, 5 or 6 people in front of us at least, and a couple kind of trickled up behind us while we were in line. And the reason the line wasn't moving a whole lot is because there was a very dissatisfied customer letting the clerk have it. And I think even the manager of the store had been called over there. And it was, all of us in the line, we weren't trying to be nosy, but it was so very awkward. Because this woman was being rather loud. She wasn't screaming or anything, but she'd be rather loud. And all of us in line were kind of like, I really wish I was, you know, in Europe right now, you know, because I just feel very awkward being here. And this lady was letting this clerk have what for? And it was something about, you know, that she thought the clerk had offended her mother and was, you know, ignoring her mother. Just a big drawn out deal that I don't remember all the details of, and quite frankly, I'm glad I don't. But all of us are here kind of involuntarily being subjected to this woman's bitterness and anger and all of what's going on. And we're all kind of like, I don't know what to do, you know, and we're all kind of looking at the floor and so on. One lady there in line, though, was brilliant. She kind of looked around at all of us in line, and she said, have any of you ever been to the butterfly house over at the botanical garden? And we were like, oh yeah, I've been there. And pretty soon, we all were talking about cute little butterflies. while this little discussion, you know, kind of became a little less prominent in our hearts and minds. And I don't know who that lady was, but I'd like, if I ever see her again and recognize her, I'd like to shake her hand. Because, you know, she diffused a situation where a lot of us just felt really awful about something. The other woman who was angry left, I think unsatisfied as well, but like she was when she came there. But you know, sometimes we have a choice between a right attitude, a right reaction, or a wrong one. And this lady in line over at that store kind of helped me see, you know, even if it's something out of my control, with my mind, I might can make it just a little better situation. God has made the world better. God has made it possible for you to have a better life as a Christian because Jesus died for you. And like the verse says, God, for Christ's sake, through Christ, has forgiven you. And so if you have never taken advantage of God's great gift of forgiveness, or if you are in need of forgiveness and prayers, we encourage you, would you come tonight as we stand and we sing.